Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the Mary and Melissa Show. And we are so happy to have everyone listening today. This is November 11th, 2015. And we have a terrific show this morning, and you probably have already heard a little bit of my prep work for this, but it bears repeating. Number one, the Mary and Melissa Show is a project of Inclusion Zone, which is a 501c3 organization operated by parents of kids with disabilities, and our mission is to make sure that everyone has the resources and assistance that they need and information in order to maximize the lives of people with disabilities in their lives. This also is Veterans Day. We want to make sure that we acknowledge that and the service of our veterans. And importantly also is that this is our 100th show, and I don't think there's anything better than having our 100th show with a person who works on vision, because this show is a work of our vision, the vision of many others who share our vision of ensuring lives of full participation for people with disabilities. So I'd like to just introduce Dr. Amanda Zeller, who is a developmental optometrist and working in our nation's capital on a number of issues: neuro-optometric vision rehabilitation, binocular vision disorder, brain injury vision rehabilitation, and special needs vision care for children and adults. Dr. Zeller, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Dr. Zeller. Great to have you. And we have our frequent contributor, Mark Fries from Merrill Lynch Special Needs Planning Group, who is always on hand to ensure that whenever you start talking about things like neuro-optometric vision rehabilitation, I don't know about you all, but I start seeing dollar signs. But Mark is the kind of a person who can help make sure that you don't get too wigged out by that, that you prevent your child from getting what he or she needs, financially speaking, that is, and with everything else in life. So, Mark, hey, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Mary, and congratulations on 100 shows. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yes, we're really quite proud and couldn't be happier than to share this moment with the both of you. Dr. Zeller, I've never heard of a developmental optometrist before, but it makes a heck of a lot of sense. So, what is that field of practice?
It's a specialty field within optometry. So most optometrists complete 4 years of graduate education, graduating from an optometry school or optometry college with a doctorate of optometry. And that's most of the optometrists that you will encounter, typically, who do eye examinations. They measure you for glasses, fit you with contact lenses, treat lots of different types of diseases of the eye, but they tend not to deal with functional vision problems. Now, when I say functional vision problems, I'm talking about issues where you might be able to see the 20/20 line on the chart just fine or with a little bit of glasses correction, but you're just not comfortable with what you see. You might find your eyes are tired when you're on the computer after working a long day. Your child may experience skipping words and lines while they're trying to read, or they'll read a word on one page but then not recognize it on another page. And there are a lot of elements to the visual process that, as a developmental optometrist, I'm interested in finding out about. So I did a lot of continuing education after my graduation from optometry school, plus working in an office with another developmental optometrist to really learn about these things that were just very, very briefly touched on in optometry school.
This is really fascinating. Tell me, so what are the types of, I mean, right away I'm thinking that a developmental optometrist would just be able to do a really good job with making sure a kid with ADHD or autism can get through the eye screenings. But it sounds like a lot more than that. So give some hard examples of how your practice is different from just going to your you know, the Joe Blow optometrist up the block?
Well, for starters, we give each patient a lot more time. One of the advantages in being in a private practice type setting is that I can decide how long my exam needs to be. I'm not dictated to by insurance companies saying, well, you have to see four patients in an hour, which obviously is not going to give you a lot of time to have a conversation and really tease out what are the real problems the person's having. One way to really boil it down to is, what is your perception or understanding of what is vision? Most people think of vision just in terms of being able to read those letters on the chart. However, it's actually a much more complicated process than that. In fact, up to 70% of the physical structures in your brain have something to do with vision. Vision is not an eyeball issue. It is a brain process. So what I'm looking at in my evaluation, besides the typical things of can you see the chart and are your eyes healthy, which is a really important place to start, I'm not discounting that. Next, I want to know, do the eyes work together as a team? Are they both pointing at the same place at the same time? Because the way that your visual system works is you've got one eye on the left, one eye on the right. They have to point together, and the picture from each eye, your brain puts together into one single percept, which is also what gives you depth perception because the separation between your eyes. So if your eyes aren't working together and if they're, in fact, interfering with one another, you're going to be sad, just for starters. You're not going to feel good. You're not going to perform the most efficiently. Some people will just, you know, feel like, oh, I'm really tired, or I'm sure you might remember back in college when you're doing an all-nighter, how you start to feel around 2 o'clock in the morning of you're reading the same thing over and over, and it's just not sticking. People will have that experience at 10 o'clock in the morning if their eyes aren't working together as a team. So that's a very important thing. The next thing I'm looking at is, do the eyes move across the page the way they're supposed to? So when you're reading, for example, and this is where a lot of my patients will come to me saying they've got issues, you have to look from, as an early reader, letter to letter to letter to put those words together. As a slightly more advanced reader, word to word to word. And as an adult, we tend to, if everything's going right, we read in chunks. So you're not reading the cat climbed up the tree. You might be reading the cat climbed up the tree, and then next line. And you have to then be able to take in a chunk of information all at once. You need to be able to turn those words into a visual picture in your head of what's going on. And then you have to make sense of it, relate it to something else you understood before. What's a cat? You see that in your mind's eye. And then think, what is up? That's spatial. There's so many different elements that come into it. So I'm looking at those elements of using the eyes. And then I'm also looking at, does a cat have an understanding of right and left, up and down? Do they have these spatial constructs? Vision is something that you learn. Sorry, I could talk for a long time.
Let me just ask you. So let's take an example of a child with, say, ADHD, which, you know, such a growing number of children having that, and the comorbidity of reading issues with children with ADHD. So let's just consider some generic child. What do you sometimes find then is really going on with a child who has reading issues? Are you finding that there is a background issue of vision that is really, you know, is the issue for this child? Can you talk, tease that out for me a bit?
Certainly. There's actually a really interesting study that has been published in the last few years. They've got different elements of it, so I couldn't exactly give you all the dates, but it's a Convergence Insufficiency Treatment Trial study funded by the National Eye Institute and the National Institute of Health. And it looked at optometrists and ophthalmologists looked at kids who have a particular vision condition called Convergence Insufficiency. And what that is when the eyes don't turn in together to point at the same place when you're looking at a book, for example. The reason they chose this particular disorder is because, A, it's very common, and, B, the presentation tends to be uniform enough that it's something you can actually do a study with. So what they looked at was what symptoms are the kids having in addition to eye strain type symptoms. And what they found was distractibility, not being able to pay attention to especially near work, some impulsivity, wanting to look out the window. So there's a huge overlap between the symptoms of convergence insufficiency and ADHD. That doesn't mean you can have both. You can certainly have both at the same time. But if you already have ADHD and then you have a vision issue on top of it, those ADHD symptoms are going to be worse. Or you could have just vision issues, which, you know, we see frequently that once we deal with the vision issues and help that kid use his eyes properly, the ADHD symptoms go away. So there's definitely a lot of overlap.
What's called move-in therapy. So if a family came to see you, again, with this mythical child, and you found that they had maybe convergence insufficiency, what would be the types of things that you would do with because this sounds just really, sounds really odd. I've never heard of any of this kind of stuff. So how do you demystify this for families, and what exactly does that treatment look like?
So what you're doing is you're having the child retrain how to use their eyes as a team. So if you think about going to a sports coach who's going to help you work on your batting stance, for example, you might be able to hit the ball, but you might not be able to hit it very far. Your accuracy might not be very good. There are certain things that the coach can guide you in to modify those muscle movements in order to be more efficient. That is one of the ways that we approach eye coordination disorders or eye teaming disorders. It's simply having the kid develop muscle memory for a more efficient pattern of how they use their eyes as a team. There's nothing wrong with the muscles. It's just that the kid never, on his own, developed good skills of how he uses them.
And that in that way, it would be a would you say it's a neurological issue because there's a neurological difference which is causing this to be why your eyesight is wired differently? I mean, is that sort of a layman's way to say it?
It's a combination of, depending on, obviously, every patient's a little bit different. So depending on what the specific issue is, it can be either a neurological issue or sometimes, you know, you might hear this phrase a lot, it's a motor planning issue. And where that comes from is, or the issue develops, vision is something that we learn how to do. And it's not something that just happens. We don't think of it that way a lot of the time because we don't remember learning how to use our visual system. Mm-hmm. We remember just seeing. It just seems like it just happened because you learn it so young.
Right.
But you also don't remember learning how to walk. But it's pretty obvious that you didn't come out of the womb walking. At least most of us didn't. I know I didn't.
No, that's really fascinating because I know that there's this, you know, vision therapy. It sounds kind of hokey. Like, it sounds really weird. But now the way you're explaining it, you know, I'm thinking, like, I had to go through voice therapy because, you learn how to talk. But guess what? I was apparently talking incorrectly and I was damaging the heck out of my vocal cords. And I had to have vocal retraining. So this is really an interesting new idea, but is it really that new? I mean, are you sort of a cutting-edge person, or are you just hasn't hit the mainstream, or why haven't I heard of this kind of stuff before?
Well, one of the things that's the problem is, number one, we're a very small profession. There are approximately 50,000 optometrists in the country. There are about, the numbers might be a little bit off since last time I checked, but approximately 500 people who have gone through the extensive training to be certified in vision therapy and vision development. There are more people who actually do vision therapy to some degree in their offices, probably about 5,000 based on the last stats that I checked. So considering the whole country, that's really small. So it's that's part of it. It's just it's a really small profession. And I think that, you know, because we're small, we haven't had the opportunity to be vocal enough. One of the things that's really nice is our organization that does our certification, which is the College of Optometrists in Vision Development, or COVD, and their website is covd.org, they've been doing a lot more public service announcements and just trying to let people know that we exist, that we can help kids.
Yeah, and to make you not sound like you're some voodoo person, which I think that's...
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just putting that out there.
When I was in optometry school, I had never heard of vision therapy either. You know, I went into optometry school just with a, you know, not much more than a layperson's understanding of how it all works. And I did my coursework with a couple of different professors who really, you know, sparked my interest. And I started thinking, oh, this is interesting and this is fun. And, you know, I went into the profession because I wanted to help people. And this is a more profound way that I can help people more than just, you know, glasses and contact lenses. And it wasn't until I was out in practice over 5 years before I even heard that anybody had ever had the perception that vision therapy was voodoo, because coming from my background and having such an interest in neuroscience that I've always had, it makes perfect sense. I didn't realize that disconnect was even there for the longest time.
Isn't that, well, it's funny because I guess when it's not in the mainstream and you haven't grown up hearing about it, it seems, but like most things, when you stop and think about it, it makes sense. So I want to just, like, turn to Mark for a second because, you know, part of, you know, maybe if a knee-jerk reaction that I'm having, like, okay, how is this not voodoo? And then I go, oh, well, God, yeah, this makes perfect sense. You got to look into it. The other knee-jerk reaction is, dang, this sounds really expensive. Holy cow, how am I going to do this? So I want to just turn to Mark Freeze from Merrill Lynch, Special Needs Planning, and say, hey, Mark, I mean, how do you advise families to go forward with something once they realize they might need to try this vision therapy, and recognizing that, sometimes these folks who are on the cutting edge, they just can't deal with the insurance stuff. So can you touch on some of the ways to help families manage those big questions?
Sure, Mary, thank you. I mean, obviously, if you have a special needs child, which I do, try a lot of things to make sure your child gets better and has everything around them that's going to be positive. So, you know, the average special needs family spends somewhere between $30,000 to $60,000 extra every year, above and beyond what people or families without special needs kids do. So it's an expensive endeavor, and there's lots of different therapies. There's speech therapies. There's certainly physical therapy, and it's just eye therapy. So, you know, you're going to do what you have to do, and our job is to make sure you have enough money to do it, and also to make sure it kind of fits in with the big scheme of things. We've talked about this in other shows, and one of the reasons I love this show is because you bring a lot of experts to the forefront so families can hear about it and say, yeah, my child's having some of those issues. Maybe I should reach out to that professional. And what you're really doing for a special needs family is building a team. You're building a team that's going to cover government benefits, which we talked about before, and you're building a team that's going to cover legal benefits and legal things that families need to do. And then Dr. Amanda Zeller Manley is talking about is the family part. You know, what do you need to do for your child? What are the therapies that need to be done? How are you going to make sure that all happens correctly? Do you have enough money behind it? Because the last piece of it, of course, is finance. Is there enough money to cover that? So we're doing the planning for families. We know, example, maybe this eye therapy is an ongoing situation. You have to kind of build that into the budget. And that's all part of it, is making sure you've built this team. You put it all down in writing. We've talked about a letter of intent before, which is kind of an instruction manual for something happened to the parents and they were gone and somebody had to take over. How would they know that that child is supposed to go see Amanda Zeller Manley and what the therapy is? and where is that in the big scheme of things. So they have kind of a list of all the people that are helping that child or maybe that adult at that point. And so there's continuity in service for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, it bears reminding again and again and again. And I think one of the things that, you know, it's just so profoundly challenging in being a parent is that there are so many pieces of the puzzle. But folks like Mark, hopefully folks like us, you know, are helping to make sure that those puzzle pieces aren't scattered across, you know, the room, but that they're all in one place. And that we do also need to recognize that sometimes the mainstream stuff that's been done in the past for our kids is not the way to go. Like vision therapy, like, you know, I've never heard of it. And shucks, I really should have. And so that's, I think, another service that we're all delivering is making sure that that the things that have been outside of what is mainstream is appreciated as a possible therapy for our kids to maximize, not because we only want to cure kids, but we want them to have the best lives that they can have. So thank you, Mark, for that. And so, you know, I did want to ask you, though, Dr. Zeller, you know, the other hot-button issue is the spike in autism diagnoses. Not that there's suddenly more kids with autism, but it's being recognized as such. So how do you work with, I'm looking at your checklist, vision checklist, autism spectrum disorder, eye contact avoidance. Yeah, obviously, you see that all the time. Closing eyes a lot, overuse of peripheral vision. So how do you work with kids, or even adults with autism? And then let me add an extra wrinkle. What if they are nonverbal? What special approaches and strategies do you use to help with their vision issues?
That's a really good point, that kids who are nonverbal can be a challenge to diagnose. So I'm sure you've had the experience, you're in the eye exam, the doctor's asking you, well, which lens is better, one or two? Obviously, a young child, a child with certain special needs, communication issues, obviously a child who's nonverbal, they're not going to be able to do that same type of eye exam. We have a modified evaluation protocol that really relies a lot on doctor observation. And there are different instruments that we can use to get a very good approximation of is the kid nearsighted, is the kid farsighted, how much is the kid nearsighted or farsighted. We're looking at, so I've got a kid, for example, let's say he comes in, he's 5 and he's not talking yet, and he's on the autistic spectrum, so he's not going to interact the normal way. So what I'm going to do, first of all, is we have a very, very long intake form that helps us get to know the families ahead of time. So I'm going to know, what is the kid like? What is he not like? And if that's at all possible, I get data from any other professionals that kid might be working with. So if he's got an OT that he loves, I'm going to call her up and say, you know, okay, Billy's coming in for an evaluation. What are some things that you know that he likes that will help me engage him so I can get the most out of my time with him without making him too exhausted or stressed out? So that's a big part of our, like, prep process is just getting that information. So once I've gotten information about Billy and I know he likes dinosaurs, then I might make my entire theme of the eye evaluation or vision evaluation dinosaur-based. You know, I need him to look over here. I've got a dinosaur toy. You know, I might pretend to be a dinosaur if that's going to get him laughing and engaged. So we have to basically not be afraid to be silly.
Right.
A lot
right.
of it. That's our starting place.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I mean, and I'm thinking, like, you know, dentists. You know, I finally found a dentist for my son who, they had a little routine, basically like a little song that would get him to open his mouth finally to get examined. And so it sounds like that's the type of stuff you do. And I'm also, you know, the other thing, I gotta ask about the issue of autism. I mean, so kids with autism often do interesting things with their eyes. They cover their eyes. They sort of poke at their eyes. Their eyes go all over the place. It might look like it's lazy eye. They're, you know, pushing them inward and outward. What is that? Is it correctable? Should it be corrected? I mean, is that sensory input, or is that just their eyes just not knowing how to use themselves correctly? I mean, that's a lot of questions there, but.
Well, yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah,
so with autism spectrum, you know, one thing that a lot of parents might be familiar with is that kids have either hypo or hypersensitivity to a lot of sensory input. And when that is auditory input, you know, the kid is covering his ears every time the fire truck goes by, or he can, you know, hear you whispering about what your plans are for tomorrow three rooms away, or whether it's, you know, you have to cut all the tags out of the shirts. I mean, those things you become more aware of, and it's pretty obvious what's going on. Okay, the kid is hypersensitive, hyposensitive, whatever it is. You see those things. And we label that as sensory integration dysfunction. Well, a lot of the visual stimming that we see is sensory integration dysfunction manifesting itself from the sense of vision as opposed to tactile, auditory, or, you know, proprioceptive. So usually the way that we approach, say, for example, you know, the hand flapping or the, you know, the eye contact, we're not usually addressing those issues directly. I prefer to think of those types of behaviors as more symptoms than causes of concern in and of themselves, because it's really, really, really common for kids on the spectrum to have visual issues. Strabismus, which is where an eye turns, you know, anywhere other than where it should be pointing. Amblyopia, which is what people refer to as lazy eye, which is when one of the eyes develops vision the same way. Those issues are much, much more prevalent in the special needs community and across the board, but also specifically also in autism spectrum than in the general population. So number one, issues that where the eyes just don't work together normally are more prevalent. And number two, this sort of concept of visual sensory integration. I have to tell you that of the many, many, many autism spectrum kids that I've seen or who the other doctors in my practice have seen, I have to say I think it's probably very rare that kids on the spectrum don't have some sort of visual issues.
Interesting.
Of some
wow.
sort. Whether it's, you know, something obvious like a strabismus, or it's more this integration, sensory integration.
And so that would be something. Now, so say a family goes to their regular ophthalmologist or optometrist. Not that we're dissing those folks. I'm sure there's wonderful people out there, but basically, they don't have that same recognition of these special needs issues and might miss, I don't want to condemn everybody, but basically they might miss some of these things that you're talking about.
That happens all the time. That happens all the time. I mean, almost every day when I see a patient, I hear, you know, why didn't anybody tell me about this? It's just that they're not aware.
Wow.
It's a lack of awareness. I have to say, unfortunately, in optometry schools, it's not something that's really emphasized. And as the healthcare system and insurance has changed over, you know, the last dozen years that I've been in practice, even more so, they're moving more and more and more to this medical mindset where it's, okay, you've got a problem, and what tool do I need to fix it, whether it's glasses, whether it's eye drops, whether it's surgery, whether it's this or that. And it's a very mechanistic approach, and that's fine if you have glaucoma or if you have a cataract that needs taken out. That model works just fine, but the more the perspective more of it's not a set of eyeballs, it's a human who uses these set of eyeballs. they've moved more and more away from that model, which I think is really, you know, to the detriment of the profession. So the reason they're not picking it up is because they're not looking. They don't know what to look for.
They don't know what to, they don't know what to look for.
Mm-mm.
Isn't that funny? And Mark, how, and you perhaps are a devotee of vision therapy. I mean, you have helped to bring this wonderful Dr. Amanda Zeller to my awareness. Is this something that you're finding that folks that you're interacting with are learning about and saying, let's get on the bandwagon?
Well, you're trying to make your the life for your child or your adult child as easy as possible. So, you know, I think finding professionals, you talked about a dentist that knows how to work with special needs kids or an optometrist that knows how to work with special needs kids, just makes your life easier. And I remember with my son Christopher, he would go out on the beach and during the day and he would, like, start stemming and jumping around and all that. We weren't sure why. And then at night he wouldn't have that problem. And so as the doctor talked about, he was hypersensitive to the light. And so once you got sunglasses on him, he was a lot better. And those are simple things, but if you didn't know that, and then you're sitting there struggling with your kid because you don't understand his behavior, you're looking for professionals to try to make, once again, your life easier. And so that's what I love, once again, about the show, is that you're bringing on people that are going to make your life easier. Maybe you don't need this particular doctor, but maybe you need somebody for your dentist, or you do have a child and they've had issues with their eyes. You're not sure exactly what it is. It wouldn't be much better to bring it to a doctor that understands the special needs world, understands what it's like if your child won't sit in that chair, understands that, you know, you need a dinosaur to calm them down and will take the time with them. And the time is really important. How much time the doctor is going to spend with you and get to know you and figure out what's going on with your family and your child.
Absolutely. And that is so well said. The matter of acceptance, enough with feeling like you have to apologize for your child's behavior. I couldn't agree more. So, Dr. Zeller, thank you for this extremely enlightening discussion. You truly have, I'm sure you hear this all the time, but you've really opened up my eyes to this and something that really needs to be promoted given what we're talking about here, that so many of these issues might not just be put on a pair of glasses, that it's much more than that, and to know that you're out there spreading the word, and we're going to do the same over here. And Mark, you as well, to make sure that families can make sure that their loved ones get the right therapy through the right types of planning. That's, again, the team approach, and the team could build, and the team might change, but you still need a team in order to bring, and it's that village idea, too, bringing that the child needs a village because, man, we have a lot of folks working with us to make sure our little guy gets to be the most successful adult. So I'm sure all of you out there listening to understand that. So thank you both on our 100th show for joining us. And Dr. Zeller, don't be surprised if we invite you back on to continue this discussion at another time. And you too, Mark, of course. So thank you both.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your 100th show.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you. All right, everyone. So thank you for listening to this 100th episode of the Mary and Melissa Show, a project of Inclusion Zone. And on Veterans Day, we are signing off.